What is up, everybody? Welcome to this week's episode of the Dense Pixels Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Brad, joined by my co-host, Micah.
Hello.
It's actually a jam-packed news week this week, which is probably for the best. We'll let you guys know up front. Next week, we will be off. And then the week after that, we'll be back, and I would imagine talking about nothing but Starfield. And Baldur's Gate, probably.
Oh, and Baldur's Gate. Yeah, I know. I'm aware that that you've kind of gotten a little bit of that out of your system, but yeah. I am very much looking forward to talking about it.
You should be, because it's going to be great. I think there's a Starfield question in the post office, so we'll talk about Starfield a little bit on this episode, but I haven't played it yet. Micah said he's played like an hour, which means he's basically created his character and done nothing else so far, so not really early enough to comment on it at this early time. So we'll talk about some news. One of the biggest pieces of news of the week is we're getting a new piece of hardware, which is somehow both the right price and also way too expensive. PlayStation has unveiled the name of their sort of handheld, it is a handheld sort of remote play device, and it's going to be called the PlayStation Portal. And don't say that too fast, because it sounds like PlayStation Portable if you say it too fast, and then you might get confused. This is the remote play device that they're going to be releasing that has a 8-inch 1080p 60 frames per second LCD screen that looks like it has a DualShock controller that was cut in half and welded onto the sides of it. It's going to support touch commands as well on the screen. It has all of the accoutrements that you would expect from the DualSense controller, including like the haptic triggers and all that good shit as well. It's coming on November 15th, and it is going to be coming out for the sum of $199.99. Despite that, I don't know who this device is for. And I know even less who this device is for once I saw some of the additional non-features that are with this device. So, again, this is only a streaming device. The only thing you can do with it is connect it via remote play to a PS5 and stream your PS5 games onto it. Something that your cell phone can probably do as well with the PlayStation remote play app with the same specs. Probably, you know, smaller screen, of course, doesn't have a DualSense controller built in, but the functionality is there. You have to play it. You have to link it to your PlayStation via Wi-Fi. It is based on Android, so I'm sure that some intrepid user will hack it in some way, shape, or form and see if it can do other things. But it seems like it's a pretty bare-bones device because it's just a mirroring device, there's not a lot of processing in it because the PlayStation 5 is the thing that's doing the actual processing of the games. This is just giving you a video stream of that coming in. The part that blew my mind a little bit is that the Wi-Fi connection is the only connectivity that this has. It doesn't have Bluetooth, which means that if you want to wear headphones, you have to actually plug headphones into a 3.5mm jack. You cannot use Bluetooth earbuds. You can use the PlayStation Pulse and headset and wireless earbuds with this, though, of course. So if you get the PlayStation branded stuff, you can do that. And PlayStation is releasing new wireless earbuds that they call the Pulse earbuds. They're going to cost $199 by themselves. So they're basically AirPods that are designed to be used with just this device and your PlayStation 5, essentially.
Yeah, this actually kind of feels right for this company. they want to be like innovative, but like in a bass-ackwards way. Mm-hmm. Whereas Nintendo is like bass-ackwards but innovative. Mm-hmm. And these price points are typical for this company also. I feel like 200 is a lot, man. You can spend $100, get a backbone, and do the same thing with your phone, which you probably already have.
Yeah. And use Bluetooth earbuds and headphones, right, which you're already using. Yeah, exactly. Just a slightly smaller screen is the only the only sacrifice that you have to make there.
Yeah, and like I mean, I guess this is for like if your significant other wants to watch something on, you know, HDMI 1, you can have your PlayStation hooked up on HDMI 2.
This is basically just a high definition Wii U gamepad, essentially,
is
what this is for all intents and purposes.
Yeah, and look, the Wii U gamepad was, I had the same thoughts about that as I do this.
Yeah,
like it's, you know, this isn't for me. You're right. I don't know who this is for. if young Micah, who was forced to go to bed but still wanted to play video games, down and the system's downstairs. I mean, can you turn this thing on? Can you turn your PlayStation on with this thing?
I would,
and then I can sneakily like
I would bed. Hope so, because
yeah, man.
Again, like I you can do that on your phone. Like I can use my phone and turn my PlayStation on from standby to connect to remote play. So I would presume that this is going to be the same kind of thing.
Yeah. But, unless you have, like, a huge house and are too lazy to go downstairs to play your video games because you're up in bed or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you only have one television and one room. And, one person wants to watch TV on one source and you can play your games on the other. I don't know. I tried that with my Switch and it didn't work out. Mm-hmm. And I had to turn my Switch off and watch whatever asinine program my wife was watching, because like that's quality time, right?
Right.
All right. I'd be curious to see how this thing, what this thing does sales wise.
I'd be curious to know what they expect for it. Like, we'll know based on how available it is in retail channels when it comes out this fall. It's just, like I said, it's just. I remember when the Switch was talking about, like, oh, like, we're going to get Netflix on there and we're going to get this, you know, these video streaming apps. I was a little perplexed, I remember talking about, because I was just like, I don't know why the Switch needs this, because you have it on your, like, you've had it Netflix on your phone forever. Like, I don't think anyone really is getting a Switch, you know, for this kind of stuff. It is weird, though, seeing a device like this come out that literally has a singular purpose. Like, as far as I know, unless someone figures out a way to make it do other stuff, they're designing this thing to do one thing and one thing only. And it is like the Rolls Royce of that. Like, obviously, like if you're going to stream PlayStation games via remote play, I would imagine that this is the best device that you can use to do that. Just because you're getting to use like a real DualShock controller and you've got a nice big screen and all that jazz. But I don't know anyone that does this that much. You know what I mean? And I hate doing it a lot too, because again, like the remote play experience, it's remote play for me. And this is true, not just of PlayStation, it's true of Xbox. It's true of like Steam Link, which I've used a little bit at home because I have, you know, I can use that with my PC, is fine if you have to. Like that's how I always view it. Like, if this is how you're forced to interact with your games, it's passable, but it's not ideal. Like, I would never want to play a game majority, you know, remote play from another console. Like, it's pretty good, but it's not great. And that's the thing that's kind of frustrating. And I don't see how this would fix that problem, because that problem is directly tied to your network at home, basically, and the interface that uses. So, c'est la vie. I'm sure a few people will pick this thing up, but again, it seems very very unnecessary.
If you have a Luddite in your family and you really want to blow their mind, then go ahead and pick this up and show them what, you know, technology can do, I guess.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, this is a no for me. And that's coming from someone who just frivolously throws money around at whatever video game thing is out, right?
Yeah.
I'm not doing that.
Yeah. PlayStation was also in the news this week. They have, starting on what day? September 6th, so next week, they are raising the price of annual PlayStation Plus subscriptions by anywhere from $20 for the PlayStation Plus Essential to $40 extra for the PlayStation Plus Premium. So the new pricing tiers, PlayStation Plus Essential will cost $79.99. Extra, which gets you, I think, just the cloud streaming, is $134.99, and then Premium, which also gets you like the retro library, is going to be $159.99. It is worth noting that even though this seems like a big jump, it does technically come out to be less than the price increases that Microsoft put on Xbox Live. Because if you remember, Microsoft raised Xbox Live prices by $2 a month, and since you pay for that monthly, that's $24 a year. So technically, a little bit higher on the Xbox side. But no one wants to see this, and, you know, they're only doing it because they can.
Yeah, yeah, they're, you know, well, our biggest competitor did it, so that gives us an excuse to do it, because we have to keep up with, you know, the market or whatever. Yeah, it kind of sucks, and I don't think they really give a reason why, and I don't think they're adding anything extra to it. So, like, it's just a price increase for price increase sakes. And look, I get price increases for, like, video games, right? Like, the jump from, you know, 50 to 60 and 60 to 70 these past two generations. I get that because, you know, these video games are being are way more advanced, and they are taking they cost more than movies to make, and, you know, there's a lot of person power needed to make these things. You got to pay people, hopefully. So I get that. This I just don't. I don't understand. And look, maybe I'm not tech savvy enough to understand why there needs to be a price increase, you know, circuits or whatever, right? But it just kind of stinks.
Yeah. I mean, there is of course there's a price associated with them to maintain the PlayStation Network and run those servers and all that jazz, because, you know, running servers costs money, but Sony's also a big giant corporation that I don't think is hurting for it right now. I think they just looked at Xbox, they saw that Xbox did it, didn't really catch any flack, and they said, oh, you know, we can do this too. And why not? And it's an extra, you know, 20 times how many millions of people are PlayStation Plus subscribers annually every single year. And that's not a bad chunk of change. Of course, let's see here. So if you're a current subscriber, if you currently have a membership, you will see these price changes reflected on your next subscription renewal if they take place after November 6th. So there's like a 2-month amnesty, so that I guess they don't hit people who are coming up for renewal out of the blue that don't listen to Dense Pixels. Anything you do after September 6th will reflect the new pricing. So if you want to load up, do it now before the pricing comes down.
Do it right now.
Yeah, literally like right now
as you hear this.
Yeah, don't don't wait. Act now while supplies last. Like I said, sucks, but, you know, we gotta pay for those new PSPs in some way, shape, or form. So we gotta.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Like these portals aren't flying off the shelves. We don't anticipate them to be flying off the shelves. So. Got to recoup that loss before we lose it, I guess.
That's right. So some interesting news, and this did not get a lot of play that I heard, you know, much in the industry, but I think it's really interesting. So Epic Games, we've talked about them before, how they're doing their best to take on the juggernaut that is Steam. They have promised they came out of the gate promising a better developer split with games sold in their store. which Steam eventually came down to almost match in response to that, which is kind of impressive. This is much more of a swing, and I'm going to be curious to see how many developers, especially smaller developers, take advantage of it, because Epic is now offering an opt-in program with for developers that's called First Run. And basically, if you choose as a developer to give the Epic Game Store 6 months, the first 6 months of exclusivity for your new game, the Epic Game Store will give you, as the developer, 100% of revenue generated by that game for that six-month exclusive period. And then once that six-month period ends, it'll go back to the 88-12 split that is typical of the Epic Game Store. They said that this will be available to games of any scale. So that means the smallest indie dev, the one-person team self-publishing, to big third-party publishers if they want to get into this and do this as well. And what's notable here as well is that Epic also said this is specifically exclusivity on third-party PC stores. So if you're a first-party, you can still post, if you're a first-party developer, you can post it on your store, no big deal, but you can't post on Steam, basically. That's what they're attacking here, for lack of a better term. This is going to be interesting because the 88-12 was a big swing in the first place, and a lot of developers and publishers took advantage of that. It's going to be really interesting to see these folks do the math calculation of how much is that extra 12% worth versus the exposure and versus the reach that you have publishing on Steam at a lower revenue split. And I'm going to be very curious to see what happens with this program as it comes out of the gate here.
Yeah, man. Also, like, I mean, they are coming for Steam, man. Yeah. Like, when you think PC games, you think Steam, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's like Kleenex at this point. And this is the type of, like, this is the type of big swing that more companies need to do. This is the type of competition that you know, companies need to do in order to try and win, you know, workers. Mm-hmm. and to get stuff like this. This is helping the worker, man. And it's wild, man. Like, because I got a feeling Steam isn't going to do anything, right? Like,
oh, no. Because they don't need to.
They don't need to, right? Like, yeah. Steam is Steam. I have Steam on my taskbar right now. I don't play PC games, but it's there. Yeah, man, this is very, very interesting.
Yeah. And the difficulty is for the Epic Games Store is that what the battle with Steam is not necessarily in convincing developers and publishers to post to them, because of course, like, if you had the choice, like, this would be an easy program to take advantage of. Problem is to your point, Steam is so ingrained with the PC game community. Like, for me, who's, you know, still a relative newcomer to PC games, like, I still buy most of my games through Steam because I buy a lot through the Humble Store. They don't give out Epic Game Store codes. They give out Steam keys. I have a Steam Deck. I can't play Epic Game Store. Oh, I could if I finagled, but, like, natively, I can't play Epic Game Store games on the Steam Deck. Like, there's hoops I have to jump through in order to make that happen, but I can play Steam games on the Steam Deck. Steam is running, you know, discounts like crazy. Not that Epic Game Store doesn't, but, you know, very rarely am I paying full price for a game on Steam. And everything's just there. Like, that's just kind of where what it boils down to. And the other thing is too, like, not that Steam is the, you know, shining example of UX when it comes to, like, game storefronts, but the Epic Game Storefront is abysmal. Like, it's really bad. I fucking hate going on there for anything, man. Like, because they do their free games, they give away a game every single week, and I, you know, usually go in and claim that. It's not a pleasurable browsing experience. Like, Steam, for all its faults, at least browsing around the catalog and having things presented to you Works really well, just when you actually start searching for specific things where that gets a little hairy. But the Epic Game Store doesn't have a good browsing experience. Like, I think that one of the things that they should do before taking a swing like this is just really polish, you know, hire a UI designer and just really polish up your storefront and make that a more appealing place for gamers to shop around it. I think that's one of the things that's holding them back from getting more adoption right now. It's just because it's not easy to shop on there.
I'm looking at images of it. It does look a little busy. And if there's one thing I can't stand, it's poor menu, like UI and inventory management. Starfield. It's really, it really, really is annoying. So yeah, I feel your pain.
Yeah. So, but again, we'll see. I think obviously this is gonna embolden smaller developers more than. Well, actually, no, I take that back. I think that more mid-range, more known quantities would take advantage of this. Because, again, if you're a small developer, you want as much exposure and reach as you can. And I don't think you get that with the Epic Game Store. But I think if you're someone that has, like, a known game, or you're, like, a known developer, I think this might be a risk that you can take because people will find your game wherever it is.
Is this a desperate attempt on Epic's part?
I don't know if it's desperate. I think they're trying to find ways to push the envelope and try to gain traction. It is a corporate tradition. Like if you're trying to gain traction in the marketplace and win share, throwing money at it is often a strategy that you can use. But again, like you have to, I think in order to win here, you have to get gamers to also buy in. And I think that you need to make it a better experience for the game buying public to do it, because if the game buyers aren't there, then it doesn't matter how good of a return you give somebody. If people can't find your game, it doesn't really make a fucking difference now, does it?
Yeah, that's why they said games of any scale, because they're hoping to entice, you know, big they want big games here.
Well, what they want is they want another Borderlands 3, because I don't know if you remember when Borderlands 3 first came out, it had a 6-month window where it was only on the Epic Game Store on PC, and so they like that was, I'm sure, a big boon for them. I'm sure they saw a huge, a huge return on that, and I'm sure they're looking for the next one of those, if I can guess. So,
yep. Well, good luck. Don't name your studio after a Epic, a word that has been overused to the point that it annoys me. Maybe you'll get better. Go to densepixels.com/fans for all of this DensePixels goodness. I moved my camera so you can see some of my toys in the background and the reflection of this light right there, my field light. Go to densepixels.com/fans to get invited to our Discord. Go to youtube.com/densepixels to see all the goodness here, the beautiful bokeh that I have, my toys in the background, and I guess you can see my screen. I think
it's not clear what it is, so.
Oh, good thing I'm not watching porn.
That's why the Mass Effect pictures had to be moved up, because we kept getting screen reflection in the background. So,
yeah, I might have to move this, put it on one of the other two monitors. But hey, go to youtube.com/densepixels and leave a comment where you think I should move my camera. I don't know. It's engagement, and that's all I care about.
Cam. You just have to look up like you're at a movie in the front row of a movie theater all the time.
Subscribe to all of our podcasts wherever you get your podcasts, including the Nerdpocalypse. What do we talk about on Nerdpocalypse? Something about James Gunn saying that those first couple of Batman movies aren't good. And
wait, when he says first couple, does he mean the?
Yeah, he means 89. He means Batman Returns. He means that first Nolan movie. It was like
the first Nolan. What?
Yeah, yeah. He was like, nah, yo, they ain't even that great. And the backlash that received.
Okay.
Black on Black Cinema, where we talked about, you ever heard of Tubi, Brad?
I have, yes.
It's a, It's an app that gives you free television and movie shows. All you need is an email address, and you can just watch whatever you want, email address and an internet connection. They have a lot of originals, Tubi originals, and we did the sequel to one of the Tubi originals, The Stepmother. And it is the Stepmother and its sequel are quite possibly the worst movies I've ever seen in my entire life. And that is not hyperbole. It's really not. I gave my initial review at the beginning of the show, and I said, I don't know if I could do this, and this is just the worst movie I've ever seen, and I don't like it, and I'm not going to have fun on this episode. And Jay pointed out that I said something to the same effect the first time we did the first movie. He said, it's wild. He said, this movie had the exact same effect as the first movie, which... God help you. And there's a third. And Jay's probably going to want to do it because he's a lunatic. You also get the weekly preview episode of the Look Forward Political Podcast. Go to densepixels.com/premium for $5 a month or $50 for the full year. You get access to all of the podcasts that we do, including the airing of grievances, which Jay says that now that his daughter is getting ready to go to school. He might have some time to, so that we can kind of finish out the last three seasons. No Time to Bleed, The Men with the Golden Tongues. Brad and I will think of something clever to do, and it can't be Metal Gear Solid 4. Not right now. It just can't. Upstage Conversation and the full hour and a half to 2-hour-ish episode of the Look Forward Political Podcast. Look. The premium feed is worth it for the political podcast alone. That is updated weekly, and you get all this extra stuff. So go to densepixels.com/premium.
All right. A couple of bits of bad news this week. The first one we learned about, I think, yesterday, where the Embracer Group have shut down with immediate effect Volition Studios, developers of the Saints Row and Red Faction series. This was a bummer, but I also don't think that it should come as a surprise to anyone. In this industry, no matter how good your studio is, and no matter how how prolific you are, you get to miss once, and if you miss again, that's usually not a good sign, unless you're independent. And of course, the first big miss for Volition was Agents of Mayhem. And if you say Agents of Mayhem, my point exactly. And they followed that up with last year's Saints Row, which Micah talked about on this show and did not come out to good reviews. It was a technical and buggy mess. Now, I will blame Embracer for the game releasing in that state. I'm pretty sure that it only did so because they pushed it out the door to recoup some money on the development, and it released as a technical buggy mess. Kind of an insult to injury, actually, because Saints Row is going to be free on PlayStation Plus this next week. So,
Jesus,
just incredible timing. And I listened to another podcast that also pointed out, isn't it interesting that this news was dropped basically alongside when the Starfield review embargoes lifted yesterday afternoon around noon. Like the review embargoes came out, every website hit the streams with their content and their reviews and their videos and all that stuff, and then just kind of sneaking out like politicians do at 5 p.m. on a Friday is this was this press release from Embracer Group, which is kind of fucked up, I will say.
Yeah, man. This sucks, man. I don't like seeing people lose their job. Look, that Saints Row game had a lot of problems, man. But if you gave that game a chance, it turns into the Saints Row, the goofy Saints Row that you remember. Problem is, you got to give it a chance, and you got to be really, really forgiving. And you gotta like the characters. And I know, you know, when this game, when Saints Row was announced, and you saw, you know, millennials as, not even millennials, like, what's after millennials?
Zillennials, yeah.
You saw Zillennials out, like, mm-hmm. here's a dude with a shirt off that wants to be a chef, and here's a guy dressed like Steve Urkel, and here's the hot girl who thinks she's not hot because she wears glasses, but if you take them off, it's like, oh my God, you're beautiful, you're always beautiful, right? Like you have these characters, and people just wanted, like, gangster stereotypes mm-hmm. again. But, like, these people were hooligans, thugs, and murderers. They just didn't, you know, dress like a rap video from 1994. You know what I mean? Well, the one guy kind of did with his shirt off, but it was a game that everyone loves. Saints Row 2, mm-hmm. right? But Saints Row 2 isn't what skyrocketed Saints Row. It was Saints Row 3.
Yeah.
The original Saints Row was just a GTA clone. Saints Row 2, broke out of that to kind of create something on its own. Mm-hmm. And then Saints Row 3...
it's when they found its
doubled
identity.
Down.
Yeah.
Right, that's when they found its identity. And then, you know, 4 was too much, and Get Out of Hell was just way too much. But the problem is, this game wanted to be, wanted to, quote, go back to its roots, mm-hmm. but it kind of straddles the line. It goes back to 1 mm-hmm. and not 2, but it turns into 3, but not enough. So it doesn't, it's spread itself too thin in the way that it's trying to please every fan of each game. Mm-hmm. And it just, they really needed to think it through again.
Yeah.
Well, but it sucks, man.
Yeah. It is always a bummer. But you had to see something like this coming again when the game flopped the way it did, and when Embracer, you know, was running into financial troubles like it is. This is to be expected. Also, kind of in the same vein, another shit news story that hits me and Micah more personally than I guess the Volition one does. So, to set the scene for this, previously, EA had everything, all of their, you know, games structured inside of one division, Electronic Arts. And last year, they made the decision to separate the gaming division into two halves. Like, you have EA Sports, which is obviously all the sports titles, and then you have EA Entertainment, which is everything else, basically. And the issue that becomes of that, if you're a development studio, is when everything was under one roof, everyone was doing fine because FIFA basically paid for everything. Like, FIFA by itself brought in enough revenue to cover all the costs for anything else that they did. And when they split it off, that means that all these other games that EA was taking a little bit more of a chance on were kind of required to carry more weight independently. And we shift that over to BioWare, who, you know, Mass Effect 3, massive success, controversy with the ending aside. And then that leads to, and then Dragon Age Inquisition comes out, critical success, commercial successful enough, continuing that series. And then the next pivot from there was the back-to-back Mass Effect Andromeda, which of course was a little bit lackluster compared to the other games in the series and a technical mess when it first came out. And then of course Anthem, which we all know the story with that. And that, again, that check was going to come due at some day, and that come due is the fact that BioWare has laid off 20% of its staff, which is about 50 employees. Which, first of all, I was shocked that BioWare Studios only had 250 employees. I would have expected them to be much bigger of a studio at this point in time. Like, yeah. Larian, who put out Baldur's Gate 3 and who's done the Divinity series previously, has over 400 people working at their studios. So the fact fact that BioWare is only had 250 came as a surprise to me. And not only did BioWare lay off 50 employees, a lot of those folks were a lot of senior staff, including Lucas Christensen, who was the lead writer for Baldur's Gate 1 and 2, which were among the first games that BioWare put out back in the late 90s. Then Mary Kirby, who was the writer of the first three Dragon Age games as well. So that was stunning. The bullshit corporate speak that came out was from BioWare's general manager, Gary McKay. And he said that in order to meet the needs of our upcoming projects, continue to hold ourselves to the highest standard of quality and ensure BioWare can continue to thrive in an industry that's rapidly evolving, we must shift towards a more agile and focused studio. It will allow our developers to iterate quickly, unlock more creativity, and form a clear vision of what we're building before development ramps up. So,
what does that even mean?
It's just a bunch of bullshit saying that EA told us we had to cut costs, and this is the aftermath of that. They say that it's not going to impact the final push to develop Dragon Age 4, but we also found out that they have pulled staff off of Mass Effect that they're currently developing to finish Dragon Age 4, which shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody. This sucks, obviously. We don't like hearing about anyone losing their jobs. It's also an indicator, though, of really how BioWare's star has faded quite a bit in the last 7 years, especially, which for me and Micah is a fucking bummer, because
yeah, man,
it's arguably one of our favorite developers out there.
I get why hardcore BioWare fans say that BioWare has fallen, and they said that years ago,
right? They said that when Mass Effect 2 came out, one of the most beloved games ever, and they're like, they sold out, man. They sold
right. I see it, right? Mm-hmm. The irony and insult to injury
of Baldur's Gate 3 being astronomic success.
Yeah. Right. Hey, let's fire the guy who wrote the first two, and let's throw out this corporate word salad that essentially means that we are going to push our developers to hurry up and get shit out one time, and not necessarily, when it's ready. You know what I mean? Like, wow, man. Yeah, this fucking stinks, man.
Yeah.
Change is not only necessary, but it's unavoidable. As difficult as this is to say, rethinking our approach to development inevitably means reorganizing our team to match our studios. All right. Yeah, that stinks, man. And what really sucks is, I don't anticipate BioWare becoming what it used to be.
Yeah.
Even for people like us who kind of jumped on this bandwagon as it was firmly rolling, mm-hmm. right? We hopped on when they were playing their songs on the radio, whereas those people were back when BioWare was an indie band. You know what I mean? and now it's just kind of sad, man. Yeah.
But again, it goes back to what I said. You get one miss, and I would argue that I guess that first miss, at least from a commercial standpoint, was Andromeda, because it did not sell nearly as well as the other games in the series did. And then Anthem came out, and that was a debacle, to put it mildly. I think our best hope is that Dragon Age, comes out next year, is as good as Inquisition was, if not better. kind of washes some of the bad taste that folks have right now for BioWare out of their mouth. And hopefully they can get down to business with Mass Effect, with the new Mass Effect game. I think one of the best things for them, though, is to be... I mean, and this move is going to force this. I think them being singularly focused on one project at a time, instead of having their focus split, I think will ultimately be to their benefit. I think that they might have, you know, bitten off more than they can chew a bit in the past couple of years. And even though that means that games kind of take longer to come out, I think it leads to a better product in the end. So,
Yeah. Cue the release date for, you know, the fourth Dragon Age game. It's not going to be something that that's anytime soon. Mm-hmm. And then cue all of the hypocrites online saying, I want my Dragon Age now. When they were just touting how you need to give developers enough time to actually develop.
Yep.
I can't wait to see it.
My concern with Dragon Age, so that game is what it is at this point, right? Like that game, like from a broad standpoint, is not changing at this point. And I'm worried now as to what people's expectations are going to be in this post Baldur's Gate world. We're even seeing it with Starfield. Like Starfield, you know, by all accounts from the stuff that I've heard and seen, is a Bethesda role-playing game. It's not this transcendent, you know, like reimagining of that formula. It is just a Bethesda role-playing game, but in space. You know what I mean? Like that's literally what it is. And there's already people who are unfairly, and because they're not, it's not apples to apples. They're, you know, holding it up against the things that Baldur's Gate is doing, and it's just like they're not even playing the same game, like it's completely right. different. And I'm just afraid that, you know, we're going to see the same sort of thing levied at Dragon Age when it comes out, because it's going to be, you know, I'm sure it's going to be a typical BioWare Dragon Age game, you know what I mean? Like, I think it's going to have a lot in common systems wise with Inquisition, which is a perfectly good game. It won Game of the Year at the fucking Game Awards, but because it's not, you know, Baldur's Gate, it doesn't have these like evolving, you know, paths and stuff like that. I think I wouldn't be surprised if people poo-pooed it a little bit when it came out, which is very unfortunate.
That sucks, man.
Speaking of Baldur's Gate 3, it will be coming to Xbox later this year. The holdup was the fact that Larian was trying their damnedest to get the split screen co-op feature that's available in the game on the other platforms that it's released on to work on the Xbox Series S. And finally, Microsoft relented at Gamescom, where they told them, look, you don't have to include that. It's fine if that's only on the X version. We are not going to stress the feature parity that we've demanded previously for this specific feature. So the X version will have the split screen co-op. The S version will not have the split-screen co-op feature, but it'll have everything else. I think that this is a good idea. I think having a policy in place that forced developers to basically develop down to your lowest common denominator, I understand why Microsoft was doing that. It's a terrible idea that's just going to hold products back on your ecosystem. And I know why you're doing it, because you don't want people that bought a Series S to feel like that they got the baby console, but they did get the baby console.
They did, yo. like why would you, like, I mean, okay, like, I get it, right? Like, you want more SKUs out there, you want to try and get as much money as you can, but, like, nah, yo, like, you can't expect the same level of quality when you have different hardware, yo, like... I'm not gonna be able to paint this picture with you know, paint and then try to recreate that picture with Crayola crayon, Joe. Like, it's not like both of them do the same thing, mm-hmm. right? But it just it's not the same. Yeah, that's the issue for me, is why even have the S?
Yeah,
but
well, they had the S because they're cheaper to produce. They were easier to get out in the marketplace, and they figured they'd sell a lot more consoles at $300 than they would sell at $500. And look, for a time, the S was all that was available. I mean, that's what I had when I had one for the brief moment in time that I did have an Xbox in-house, is I had an S because that's what I could get, and I didn't need it to be the beast machine, because I had a PS5. like if it's any games that were coming out, you know, that's third party, and I cared about the performance to a certain degree, I just played on PlayStation. Like, it wasn't a big deal. I was only playing Xbox for exclusives anyway.
You're asking to be the B console. Mm-hmm. If you come out with that SKU, you're looking to confuse the consumer, mm-hmm. right? And two, you're setting yourself in a second place position at best. And I don't know. I don't know business, but that just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
Duck it up and try to get as many regular Xboxes out as you can. Like, $500 is a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, like, you will get there.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's been like that for, it's been like that's forever. Like, consoles are the loss leader until they're not, mm-hmm. 5 years later. So I don't, I don't understand what the issue was.
Yeah. And honestly, I don't know if they would have dislodged this had Baldur's Gate not been the mega success that it is. I think the fact that it's the talk of the town, kind of forced Microsoft's hand a little bit here. I don't know if they would have acquiesced if there wasn't an impetus to get it on the console ASAP, because they know, like they've already ceded what, at least 2 months of exclusivity to Sony, or quasi exclusivity for the console version of this game. With that,
yeah, so. Yeah. they're trying to strike while, you know, strike while the iron's hot, but like, yo, the iron's been put away. Like, it's coming back out, and then it's going to be put away again.
Yeah, I think they're going to rue the decision not to be a little bit more forthright on that once the sales figures come out. Because I have a feeling when that game releases on PlayStation, it's going to fucking be huge. Just like I think they're going to get another wave, just like they did when it released on PC. I really do.
Can't wait.
Where it was like fuck Steam. I think it was like the seventh most concurrent users playing a game ever. Like it was like the number seven game as far as concurrent user count goes. Yeah. Oh, by the way, speaking of EA, not to rub salt in the wound for EA, but you know, that Immortals of Avium game that came out, which by all accounts was like a fine 7 out of 10 game, apparently on release weekend they were already down to like 700 concurrent users on PC. Yikes.
Damn.
Tough one.
Good lord. All right.
Last news story of the week. When you play stupid games, you win stupid prizes, much like Darren Harris did when he stole 67 copies of Starfield. Okay? And so he started playing the game, and he uploaded about 45 minutes of footage to online in advance of the game coming out. And that's not what got him in trouble. What got him in trouble is that he fucking posted on TikTok in relation to playing the game while smoking weed, which was hilarious. The TikTok video.
Oh, God. All right. I don't know what this person looks like, but you just said that. Yeah. And I'm reading this quote. God. Yeah. God, yeah,
sorry,
damn it.
Sorry. I didn't mean to accidentally confirm that. And then he started selling copies of the game illegally online, which is really what got him in trouble. So he tried shutting down his social media account after he realized that, oh shit, I'm kind of fucked now. Of course, it was already too late at that point. When the police searched his home, they found a FedEx package that had a copy of Starfield sealed inside and six copies of the game across two editions. Also had weed and three handguns, one of which was stolen. So he's in a bit of trouble, Mr. Harris is. So we'll see what happens there. So
look, man, look. I'm rooting for everybody black, but like, nah, yo, this ain't it, yo. This ain't it, man. Come on, yo. Come on. And look, he endorsed the game. For what it's worth, he endorsed the game.
That he did. He gave Todd Howard kudos and said that, you know.
Oh shit.
This is the real shit. So
perfect timing about leaving Earth and all that.
Oh man. Shit.
That's funny, man. That's funny. Know what else is funny? The way links work. For example, if you go to densepixels.com/Amazon for all of your Amazon purchases, if you use that link, you get to buy whatever you want on Amazon, and we get a little bit of a kickback. So I am on densepixels.com/Amazon, and I have been contemplating upgrading my camera to a Sony A7IV. And if I do, I will use the densepixels.com/Amazon link because, that's a spicy meatball right there. And that will really help us out. So if you want to buy, a Sony camera or a Canon or, do people still buy a Nokia?
I think not here.
Nikon.
Not here. I don't think as much. Though Jay has a Nikon.
Well, that tells you all you need to know about Nikons.
I thought you were going to get really fancy and get like a Leica or something like that.
No. No. not made of money. Go to densepixels.com/Amazon and help us out.
You can ask us questions by going joining our Discord, densepixels.com/fans, and posting in the post office, just like T-Wash did, who said, in your opinion, who has the WWE done the most dirty? In their opinion, it's Matt Hardy and Lita. I don't know if I can agree with Lita, because she's had a pretty solid career for WWE.
I mean, they brought her back. Mm-hmm. They had her wrestle one of the most popular wrestlers in the company.
Yeah.
So... whatever they did to Lita, like they, you know, they had her have a miscarriage and all that, and all that. She got, you know, the R word, the four letter R word, and then had a miscarriage, and like the 90s were a wild time.
That was
like,
in the 2000s, though.
Like, that was in the 2000s.
Yeah. Jesus yeah. Still Attitude Era. Yeah. So WWE has done a lot of people dirty, but they've also done and come good with a lot of people like Mickie James, great recent example where, you know, when she was let go last time, it was, you know, really anonymously and like they packed her shit up in a trash bag and mailed that to her. But then they had her come back at the Royal Rumble. She actually got to come down to the ring like as the Impact World Champion, you know, Knockouts Champion, which was insane. Like I never thought I'd see the day, that kind of thing. So they've come good in a lot of people. I think the answer here, and even though they've reached out and mended some fences with this person, I don't think they've come anywhere near how they kind of really fucked him over. And that's Bret Hart. I think Bret Hart's probably the guy who WWE probably did the most dirty. And I'm not saying the Bret Hart's hands were clean.
Yeah,
in that situation. I'm not acknowledging that Bret Hart was blameless in that whole ordeal. But considering the facts behind his departure, like the fact that he really wanted to stay and Vince just kind of reneged on a contract that they had agreed to because he didn't have the money to do it, and let him go to WCW, and the fact that he left the way he did, and then what happened to his career after he left, which was not WWE's fault, but, you know, had he not been in WCW, Bret Hart might have wrestled, you know, for 10 more years. Well, you know, you can make the argument. So, I think it's probably Bret Hart. It's hard to argue. I can't think of anyone else that had had a more impactful departure than him.
Yeah, it's something that is still like it's wrestling history.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like that is a footnote in professional wrestling history. Like that's how important that is. And you know, Bret Hart has always been a bitter old man. Yes. I don't care how old he was. He's always been a bitter old man. And yeah, like that was just a match that just was never going to work, right? Yep. It was never going to work. Especially because like even when Bret even like the beginning of the like the new generation era, right? Mm. Like you had people like Hogan, like, oh, he's too small, brother. I'm not gonna job to this guy, man. Like, give me the fat guy. I'll job to the fat Samoan Japanese guy, right? Like, he's been dicked around, mm-hmm. but the one thing that I can appreciate Bret Hart about is that he can hold a grudge. Like, I respect it.
He really can. like oh my god.
He never forgets.
The spite fuels him. My favorite Bret Hart quirk is that he can't talk about Goldberg without firsty lasty naming him all the time. Like it's he never just says Goldberg or Bill. Like Bill Goldberg. Like it's every single time he says his name, it's always Bill Goldberg.
Yeah, that's the mark of someone who is obsessed with a guy who fucking wrecked his career. When he got kicked in the head and then just couldn't do this shit anymore. Yeah. He's just like Bill Goldberg, right? Like he's just going insane.
Yep. So and then John C says, "What are some of your favorite Bray Wyatt memories?" Yeah, we haven't podcasted since the unfortunate passing of
Winston. Yeah, man. That was really, really sad, man. And I have one memory of Bray Wyatt, and it was his debut as Bray Wyatt. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember that. I don't know if you remember where they were when they debuted, but he debuted as Bray Wyatt in Baltimore.
Oh, really?
And, yes, and I remember that because I had just come from Florida mm-hmm. to see my wife's family. And you know how Vince is all big on the airport test?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man. The airport test is real. And you see those big dudes like just towering over everyone else. You don't really realize how big and how tall some of these dudes are mm-hmm. until you do the airport test. And that's where I saw him. And I said, that guy looks like Husky Harris. And he had John Huber with him and mm-hmm. and it was wild, man. And you know, I'm not a dickhead, so I'm not gonna run up to people and just be like, right? Like but I had to do a double take because I was like, holy shit, like that guy's fucking huge, man. Like that's a big dude, man. And yeah, so I remember that, man. And look, from all accounts, that dude was really nice and you know, I can't imagine losing a friend, a brother, a family member at 36.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that guy had four kids, man. Like, it's so sad. It's, you know, and I also part of me feels bad for Terry Funk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, like
kind of got one of the legends of the industry kind of got over.
Yeah, it got overshadowed.
Yeah,
it got overshadowed. But at the same time, right? Like that guy lived a life. He lived a hell of a life, and Wyndham Rotunda didn't get to do that. And you know, you say what you want about his booking and his in-ring work. My favorite match of his mm-hmm. was the match that he had with John Cena. The Firefly Funhouse match.
Oh, that match. I wasn't sure if you were talking about that match or the first one that they did. So,
I you know why I love that match? Because it's unlike anything I've ever seen before. Mm-hmm. And that is something rare for someone who's been watching wrestling for, you know, 35 years. Yeah, man. I hope that family can get through it, and you know, if you're the praying type, you know, shoot a prayer out for them kids, man, and his wife.
Yep. And I'll say this too, like, you're always going to remember him. He left a, you know, he burned his mark into this industry, in a way that few people did. Like, you will never forget that dude. Because, and to Micah's point, like, you may not have always agreed with how he was booked, and you may not have always liked the stories and the things that were told, but they were memorable, and he was doing things differently than anybody else was doing it. And kudos to, you know, WWE deserves credit for giving him that leash, right? For letting him cook, basically.
This is some wild shit, yo.
Yeah.
Like, and they put that stuff on Fox, yo.
Yeah.
Like, they put that stuff on network TV, from a conservative network, right? Mm-hmm. Like, a conservative leaning network. Like, that's some wild shit, man.
Yeah. My favorite memories, like I said, when he started doing the Firefly Funhouse stuff, like, I remember we talked about that. It seemed like every single week. Like someone in the post office was mentioning, or, you know, you and I were just bringing it, because again, like, it felt so smart. It just, in the way it was, like, you know, no one had ever thought to do that kind of, like, a Mr. Rogers character, but like a demented version of it. And it's just like, oh, that makes perfect sense. Like, I can't believe no one's thought about doing stuff like this. And just because he was so creative with it, and like I said, they were able to take Alexa Bliss and seamlessly fit her in to that storyline without it feeling forced or wrong in any way. And I'll never forget, like, the first match where he performed as the Fiend against Finn Balor at SummerSlam. Like, we had never seen anything like that before, and it was like I'd never seen. It's rare that you see someone's character bleed through in the way that they wrestle to the extent that it was in that case. You know what I mean? Like, it was just really interesting. And kind of like indelible. Now, again, you know, you could argue that that character and how he's booked went off the rails pretty quickly. And it kind of did. Like, I think once we got to that Hell in a Cell match against Seth Rollins, we were just like, okay, wait a second. Like, this is,
yeah,
like, you've taken this a weird direction. But again, like, for when it was first happening, it was like nothing we'd ever seen before.
Yeah.
Anthony says, what is your favorite snack? Theirs is a PB&J, quick, easy, doesn't hurt their stomach, and is perfectly balanced like all things should be.
Favorite snack?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I have a favorite snack. I don't know. Like, is ice cream a snack?
Yeah. Yeah, you can go with that. That's fine.
Yeah, then it's mint chocolate chip ice cream, and I can't have a lot of that anymore, because I'm on the back end of my lifespan, so I can't just eat ice cream like that. We went down the ocean, mm-hmm, this past week, and my youngest son had never had ice cream before, so we went on the boardwalk, and I got my family soft serve, and I got my eldest boy, myself, and my wife some soft serve, and my youngest son is sitting there all mad, right, looking at everybody eat. And my wife is like, I don't think he's ever had ice cream before. So she had soft serve with vanilla and chocolate fudge, mm-hmm, mixed in, and she gave him some. And he turned into a fucking asshole, dude. Like, it was like he was on coke, man. Like, he was just yelling and screaming and just going crazy. He was yelling at the water, and he was going bonkers, man. Like, I had never seen it before. And when all that shit finally got out of his system, he calmed down, but. Yeah, so ice cream is a bit of a problem for me and my family, I guess.
I have a couple go-to snacks. Lidl makes a really good, like, ruffled potato chip. And I'm not a potato chip guy. Typically, I don't really care for potato chips. But for some reason, that fucking Lidl chip is like crack cocaine. It is really good. And I eat the shit out of that. Like, if I need, like, a meal and I'm not feeling anything, peanut butter toast is a pretty is a go-to, like, a comfort food snack for me. So that's usually pretty good. Those are probably my two big ones, I would say. Cam says, if you had a magic wand and could rid the world of just one thing, would you also pick the CM Punk hot take industrial complex? I need that dude to just fucking go away. I really do.
I'm tired of, like, every, like, I don't get a chance to watch wrestling as much as I used to, so I watch, like, recaps and listen to podcasts and stuff. And it's just, like, every week, like, they're talking about fucking CM Punk, or CM Punk is at the center of some fucking controversy, and there's another bitter old man, right?
That's, like, the thing, man. Like, so, like, on Look Forward, like, I've joked a lot about, like, Donald Trump is literally the world's most thin-skinned man. I think CM Punk gives him a run for his fucking money, man. Like, any perceived slight, real or not, that's thrown in his direction, he gets his fucking hackles up. And again, like, trouble follows that dude, and he likes to play, like, oh, like, you know, it's not my fault, and this just follows me around. Bro, there's one common denominator that's involved with all of this shit. And at some point, you have to, like, look at the mirror and be like, oh, wait, it's a quote Taylor Swift, it's me. I'm the problem. It's me. So, Jesus Christ.
CM Punk is, I don't know where that pay attention to me gif comes from, but that is him, right? Yeah. And look, I can appreciate the fact that, like, people love that guy. I don't know why people love that guy, but they do. And that's fine, for, you know, as far as I've seen, he hasn't, like, hurt anybody. But he is the textbook example of the liberal asshole who, just because you're on the right side of history, thinks that they can be a dick about it and be an asshole. And, like, nah, yo, you still have to, like, treat people with respect. Otherwise, you're not going to get it.
Yeah.
And
I just don't like people who carry themselves like the world owes them something. And that's what I get from him. Is he carries himself, like, just by the grace of his existence, you know, like everyone owes him just for being there. And I'm just like, bro, you could have spent the whole rest of your life away, and I wouldn't have given two shits. Like, it's cool that you came back. It's cool that you and the fans and everything got some, you know, got a chance to have a real closure for your career. But when you act like this and make it all about you, like, and the problem is that this is how you see the difference between what WWE is as a company and what AEW is. Vince McMahon, for say what you will about him, would not have tolerated this shit.
No.
Like, and I don't think he would have even tried it, honestly. Like the shit with the Elite last year and now this shit with Jack Perry. But Tony Khan is a fucking fan first and an owner second, and he is so afraid, like he wants to be one of the boys, and he forgets that you're running a company, dude. Like, you need to fucking be the dude and stop this shit.
Yeah, man. It just, I just kind of, and the thing is, right, like, it would be one thing if, like, CM Punk was, like, this phenomenal wrestler that, and there was, like, aspects to his thing that only he can do, right? But, like, he's not the best in the ring anymore. He's nowhere near the best on the mic, even in that very company.
No.
Right?
No, there's a 25-year-old running circles around him on the microphone.
Right. And that was, and he that was that company's best, like, story stay for maybe this Adam Cole MJF thing. I'm really enjoying that.
Yeah.
But what's the common denominator there, right? So it's not even, and he doesn't put on like everybody else. He's like a jack of all trades, master of none.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, I don't know, man. It ain't there. It's not there anymore. Yeah. And look, to let my bias be known, I've never been a CM Punk guy. I don't understand. I've never gotten it,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, and outside of like Chicago, like, I just don't. I don't know. When people were chanting for CM Punk in WWE after he was gone, they weren't chanting for CM Punk.
Yeah.
That was an anti-authority chant.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, because they couldn't say, fuck you, Steph, or fuck you, Vince, mm-hmm. right? So they just said CM Punk. So look, I've never gotten the guy. I certainly don't understand why grown-ass men are crying for his return when he returned. But, you know, I cry in movies.
That dude gave him a fucking, like, Tony Khan gave him a fucking TV show. Basically.
Yeah, he gave him a whole ass TV show,
which is gonna have
Dennis Rodman on it.
Well, and it's just but like you know, there are people that are just like why are you gonna fracture your locker room like that? Like there are people that are just like, yeah, like if he's calling the shots, like I'm not fucking wrestling on Collision. Get the fuck out of here. And I don't blame him. Why would you?
Yeah, it's just odd.
It's stupid.
It's just odd.
It doesn't make any
sense. Also. Yo, them putting Dennis Rodman on Collision is just like, does it get the joke that people think that AEW is WCW? I don't know, man. I don't know. I've never been a CM Punk guy. Don't hate the guy. I just don't get it.
Yeah. Kit Plitzkin asks, I just picked up my first From Software game and I chose Sekiro on a scale of 1 to fucked. How fucked am I? I didn't realize this was in the post office, so I responded with a GIF from Entourage of Ari saying, "I mean, you are so fucking fucked." Yeah, from a difficulty standpoint, I don't know if you could have picked a harder one. So
I wish I had seen this earlier. I would have posted the GIF from Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, the best mm-hmm. Indiana Jones, at the end when they're picking the grails. And that one dude picked the wrong one. You chose poorly.
Yeah, honestly, from an accessibility standpoint, either Dark Souls 1, Bloodborne, or Elden Ring would probably be the best places to start. Even though Elden Ring is vast and arguably difficult as hell, but it kind of eases you into it a little bit. More than the other ones have. Bloodborne is probably the best one, but if you don't have a PlayStation, that might not help you. So, Amir says, with Starfield being ridiculously overhyped and coming out to good but not great reviews, does that kill the hype of the game, or is just good enough great for Xbox? Before somebody kills my take, I only ask because people were talking about Starfield like it was the second coming of video games, so everyone was expecting 10 out of 10s. I think that was in response to Johnny had posted somewhere else in the chat that the reviews are actually pretty good for Starfield. Like, they're not like, you know, Tears of the Kingdom level, but like they're perfectly fine. So here's the thing, and I know we talked about this before. I have learned my lesson not to get too hyped up for games, because I've been burned too many times in the past by too many games that were supposed to be knock your socks off that just came out and were, you know, middling to shit in a lot of ways. And so I've been very reasonable about setting my expectations for Starfield. And we said, like, in our coverage, like, while we've been blown away by, you know, that the Summer Games Fest Microsoft event that they showed, we've always tempered that with, if this game sticks the landing, then X, Y, and Z. And by all accounts, it's stuck the landing, but not like in a way that you've never seen before. Like I said earlier in the show, the reviews kind of make it sound like it is the next Bethesda RPG and it's in space. And yeah, it comes with all the good and the bad things that are saddled alongside Bethesda RPGs.
Yeah, I like we said earlier, I played about an hour. I only had one crash, and it is, my expectations for this game were never anything more than Bethesda game in space, right? Mm-hmm. They were never anything more than that. And if you go into that, and go into this game thinking that, then you'll be fine. Mm-hmm. I think, right? This is only after an hour. If you like the Outer Worlds, the first hour of this is fine.
Mm-hmm.
If you vividly remember the beginning of the first Mass Effect, where you go to Eden Prime and you touch something and you see visions of a possible future, I mean, that's this. Mm-hmm. Right? So after an hour, it's fine so far.
Yeah.
Now I have some expanded thoughts once I get a little more into it. But no, you're right. I try not to get myself too hype. I failed with Baldur's Gate 3. I'm like really, really hyped for that. But if it's not something that, if it's not like an existing property that I already know, mm-hmm. like, I'm probably going to end up getting Mortal Kombat, but I'm not too hyped for it. I'm definitely going to get Spider-Man. I'm looking at videos and, you know, I'll probably end up getting it. I'm looking at Spider-Man's coming out. I'm going to be hyped for that. It's a known quantity for me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I'm predisposed to getting that. But yeah, something brand new. Nah, I'm not super duper like hype for stuff. Like, that's why you didn't hear me talk about Starfield for a month,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, prior to it coming out, so. Yeah.
And I'm going to be very curious, because we run a wide gamut on this show in terms of feelings for Bethesda games. So you have Carrie, who's the Bethesda super fan, and I'm curious to see how she reacts to this game. You have Micah, who will finish a Bethesda game, but doesn't, like, you know, isn't, like, obsessed with them and think that they're, like, the best RPGs in town. And then you have me, who usually bounces hard off of Bethesda games after a certain set amount of time. So
yeah.
I'll be very curious to see if this holds true to those personality traits, or if this can somehow change things for me, especially. But maybe, you know, what if Carrie is like? Like, that'll be interesting as well, I think. So. The spy who sat by the door says, with PlayStation Plus subscription increasing, what? That word is a no-go term.
Yeah, I appreciate for a white team, isn't it? Okay. You. I appreciate you not saying that.
Okay, yes, good. I'm just making sure.
I appreciate you not saying that. It's a title of a book.
I know it's the title of a book, but that's still a movie. You know.
Yeah, I really appreciate you not pulling a Jack and being like, "Whoa, yeah, this is the movie. It's the lyrics. It's the lyrics, bro. Like, come on, man. Like, I'm quoting it. Like, nah, yo."
Yeah. No. There's certain things that no one listening to the show needs to hear me, a white guy, come out of my mouth. With PlayStation Plus subscription increasing, do either of you anticipate dropping to a lower tier or possibly even canceling your subscription? That is an interesting question. So I am using my PlayStation much less frequently than I ever have. And so I have until March to figure that out. And when I first saw the price increase, the first question that went through my mind is, do I need to re-up my PlayStation Plus subscription when it expires? I don't know if I do, because I'm not using it that much. And it's one of those things that I could do potentially when I need it. But then you're paying monthly, and the, you know, the value is not quite as good because it's $10 a month. So,
yeah, I'm stuck paying because this is where the majority of my friends play. I am a fighting game enthusiast, right? Like, I'm nowhere near like a pro or anything, but I don't mind getting my ass whooped online every once in a while. I'm a masochist, apparently. And I need to be able to go online to do that. So yeah, I'm kind of stuck with the price increase.
Mark asks, knowing each other's taste in games, what are the absolute worst games that you could inflict onto your fellow hosts?
A Grand Theft Auto style game for you, right?
Yeah.
You're not really big into open world.
It takes a real special open world action game, especially like one based in like a city, to get
me,
to get me into it. Yeah, I would be bored out of my mind, I'm pretty sure. Let's see, for you, I'm gonna pull down. My face is gonna go dark for a second, so don't worry about that. See, the tricky thing with you is that you like to try things, at least.
I'll try something.
You'll try something. I don't know if you'll necessarily like it or not.
Right. That's the thing. Like, I have discerning taste, but I need to I need to try it to know that I don't like it.
What do you think about a 4X game?
A 4X game?
Yeah, like Civ or Stellaris or something like that.
That's it. Those are the games that that I'm not. I don't like simulation games. Mm-hmm. Especially like I've tried the most accessible Civilization game there was, which is Civ 6, I think I want to say,
or was it Civ Revolution?
Or Revolution? Maybe it was Revolution.
Yeah, Civ Revolution was the one they designed for console. So
yeah, I tried that. I couldn't get into it. I don't like management in my games. I have to do some of that for my job, and I don't want to have to do that in a video game. Like, I don't find that fun, which is why I don't find like farming simulators fun. Anything that has to do with like. Anything where the game is resource management.
Oh, you know, actually, like, you know what the actual answer for you is, and I'm kind of simpatico on this. I would throw something like Ark at you, and you'd probably hate that.
Ark,
yeah, what is Ark? Ark Survival Evolved. It's like a survivalist game, but there's dinosaurs.
Yeah, I don't want like survivalists. Like, I'm trying to survive now. You know what I mean? Like, I don't like things where I have to think too hard.
Well, those games are all resource gathering, optimization, like, you know, that sort of stuff. Nah. A lot of repetitive tasks, that sort of stuff.
Nah, that's not me. Which is why I can't play like too many tactical RPG what was that? That space tactical with the Zergs. What game?
Oh, StarCraft?
Yeah, I can't play like StarCraft and stuff like that. Like anything that's resource management, I just get annoyed. I get annoyed.
And finally, Anthony says, is Micah ready to cross the picket line and get his start in video game voice acting due to the pending strike? Anthony, you were not nice enough. You were not mean enough. Is Micah ready to become a scab in the video game voice acting industry and take advantage of the poor strikers who seem to be willing to make a work stoppage happen?
See, the thing with a scab, right? Like, aren't y'all like, aren't they like blackballed? Like
when they usually when the strike do become is black over. Ball. Yeah.
So typically, that's what happens. So. so yeah, no, I'm not doing.
Like, you could be a union member one day. You don't want to become a scab.
Yeah, you don't want to. You don't ever want to be a scab, man. Like, once you're on strike, you become Bret Hart. You get real bitter and you hold grudges during a strike.
It's funny because there is a handful of, because I used to get like baseball sims every year, and there's a handful of players who would not appear in these games. Like, they would have like facsimiles in the game of like not real players representing those guys, and come to find out, like, is because they weren't members of the players union. And the reason why is because when they had the strike in 94, apparently some guys like crossed the picket line and played. And so like they were forever like not able to join the players union for that, which means that anything the players union is officially licensed for, you can't appear in. So like Kevin Millar was probably the most notable one who played for the Red Sox and the Orioles, where he can never be in any baseball games because they were all officially licensed by the MLBPA, and he crossed that picket line in 94. So
he couldn't do that. Nah, man. Nah, don't. I know it sucks and it's hard, but don't be a scab, man. Like, it will not pay off in the long run.
No, definitely does not. So again, make sure you go to densepixels.com/fans, join the Discord, and ask us questions. We will answer them on the air. When we record these shows, you can subscribe to this show as well as all the other TNP shows by going to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or your podcatcher of choice. And of course, go to youtube.com/densepixels, where you can watch us in video format every single week. So again, no show next week. We'll be back the following week with Starfield and Micah's Baldur's Gate impressions. But until then, thank you guys very much for watching and listening, and we'll see you all the next time.
See ya.